Thank you. I'm going to talk today about vitamin D and reducing risk of cardiovascular disease. I have a number of sponsors, and I'm very grateful for their funding. I can skip the physiology part and the part about vitamin D status in UAE, but I want to talk about the primary risk factors for cardiovascular disease and the secondary risk factors and how vitamin D might affect these risk factors, and then show results on the epidemiology of vitamin D for cardiovascular disease, maybe with vitamin D recommendations. Dr. Haas has already explained this slide, so I'll skip this. We have vitamin D has been produced by plants and animals almost from the time life began. The driving factor was the need to regulate calcium flux and storage within cells. In complex animals, vitamin D receptors form to affect gene expression, enhancing many of them and suppressing others. The hormonal metabolite of vitamin D, 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D, can activate the vitamin D receptor, and then the vitamin D receptors control the expression of at least 200 genes, if not more. In the UAE, staying indoors wearing clothing are two of the reasons why serum 25-hydroxyvitamin D concentrations are low. This has already been discussed. Now, what are the indications of cardiovascular disease risk in the UAE? For 2000, these were the statistics. Obesity was about 25% for males, 40% for females. Diabetes mellitus type 2 was 47% for males, 32% for females. Metabolic syndrome, which is a combination of hypertension, obesity, high cholesterol, and other factors, was 35% for males and 42% for females. Cardiovascular disease rates were 3% for males and about 2% for females. So there are a lot of indications that cardiovascular disease is a very important disease for the United Arab Republic, or not United UAE. This paper suggested ways to prevent diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and cardiovascular disease. One is maintain body weight at the young adult level, the body mass index of 20 to 22 kilograms per square meter. That could be through eating less and exercising more. Keeping fat intake below 30% of total energy. Derive a major portion of energy from complex carbohydrates in cereal, grains, vegetables, and fruits. Restrict visible fat consumption, especially animal fat sources. Try to get at least 5% of the fat intake as 18:2 fatty acids, such as soybean oil or canola oil, and eat fish at least once a week. Now, the lifetime risk of cardiovascular disease, according to one recent paper in New England Journal of Medicine, include high blood pressure, high lower density lipoprotein cholesterol level, smoking status, and diabetes status. Another paper from the this region of the world found that hypertension gave an odds ratio of 7.3 for risk of cardiovascular disease. Diabetes mellitus increased the odds ratio by a factor of 3, and a sedentary occupation increased it by a factor of 3 as well. Now, how does vitamin D reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease? The mechanisms seem to include reduced risk of hypertension, reduced risk of chronic kidney disease, diabetes, and respiratory infections, which are either risk factors for cardiovascular disease or often precede cardiovascular disease, reduced risk of calcification of the arteries, reduced risk of inflammation, and reduced levels of matrix metalloproteinase 9, which can destroy tissue. The hypertension rates versus 25-hydroxyvitamin D is a study from Los Angeles, and they divided the groups into four groups. Those with the lowest 25-hydroxyvitamin D concentrations had a hypertension rate of 52%. Those in the next lowest group had a 41% hypertension rate. The second from the highest had 27%, and the very highest had 20%. So we had a factor of 2.5 increase in hypertension going from high to low hypertension rate. Now, in the UAE, I think the mean value is probably around 20 to 30 nanomoles, which means the hypertension rates here are probably fairly high. Question is then, can vitamin D supplementation reduce blood pressure? There is actually only limited evidence that supplementing with vitamin D over a short period can affect blood pressure. This suggests that vitamin D deficiency affects blood pressure early in life or through a gradual process. In fact, a rat study found that early life vitamin D deficiency is associated with endothelial vasodilator dysfunction, and this is likely to contribute to accompanying elevation of blood pressure and an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. As for cholesterol, there is very little evidence that vitamin D affects cholesterol levels. In other words, taking vitamin D is not going to lower cholesterol. However, the cholesterol levels affect the vitamin D production, as shown in this slide, where those with the higher serum cholesterol levels have the higher vitamin D production, a higher serum 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations, presumably from UV radiation. Now, here's another paper by Armin Zitterman et al. On the effect of vitamin supplementation effect on cardiovascular risk factors. This is a one-year study. And for those, the 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations increased from 33 nanomoles per liter at the beginning to about 85 nanomoles per liter at the end of a year. And this was compared to a control group, and this was shown to be an effect of the treatment. The other thing that's very important here is that the 125 dihydroxy vitamin D, the active metabolite, also increased, in this case, from 87 to 127 picomoles per liter, I believe. This is also very, very significant. Parathyroid hormone decreased by a significant amount, and the tumor necrosis factor, a mark of inflammation or other adverse effects, decreased slightly. Unchanged were blood pressure, calcium, triglycerides, low LDL, HDL, and C-reactive protein. Reduced in both treatment and control groups were interleukin-6, glucose, HbA1c, and proinsulin. So there's limited evidence that vitamin D supplementation has the effects related to cardiovascular disease on the short term. Probably the primary one then is the effect on 25-hydroxy vitamin D and 125-dihydroxy vitamin D. As for smoking, smoking reduces both 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations and 125, but increases PTH. Reduces. There's no difference in ionized calcium between smokers and non-smokers. Smokers also have small but significant reductions in bone mineral density. So part of the effect of smoking on cardiovascular disease risk could be lowering of vitamin D levels. Obesity also lowers vitamin D concentrations. A recent paper found that it's the large fat mass of obese people that sequesters the vitamin D. It's just sort of the dilution of the vitamin D in a large body. So when dealing with larger people, they have to be given correspondingly larger amounts of vitamin D to normalize their vitamin D concentrations. Type 2 diabetes has been studied a fair amount with respect to vitamin D. A study reported from Harvard in 2006, as a 20-year study looking at vitamin D from diet and supplements assessed every 2 to 4 years. They found a 33% reduced risk of diabetes for those taking over 800 IU per day compared to less than 400 IU of vitamin D per day, and more than 1,200 milligrams per day of calcium versus less than 500 milligrams per day of calcium. So this is a fairly convincing study. Another study found that 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentrations were inversely correlated with insulin resistance. The lower 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentration was associated with higher blood glucose, insulin, and insulin resistance after adjustment for various factors. Another study, this one from Sweden, found that sunlight exposure reduced the risk of diabetes mellitus. This study had 40,000 women in the study, 1,000 women in each age group, and they found that women with active sun exposure habits had a 30% lower risk of having diabetes mellitus as compared to those with non-active habits. So this is, again, another very strong bit of evidence. The mechanism whereby vitamin D reduces diabetes appears to both be through effects on the beta cell function and on insulin sensitivity. This study reports that. I'll make my slides available at the end so you don't have to take notes if you like. I'll show you how to get this so you can follow it a little more slowly, a little more carefully. Arterial calcification is another important risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Calcification of vessels reduces their elasticity, affecting the hemodynamic parameters of the cardiovascular system. The development of arterial hypertension, cardiac hypertrophy, ischemic heart disease, or peripheral arterial disease significantly increases mortality in patients over 60 years of age. Stage of advancement and the extent of accumulation of calcium deposits in vessel walls are key risk factors for ischemic events. Vascular calcification is an active and complex process that involves numerous mechanisms responsible for calcium depositions in arterial walls. They lead to an increase in arterial stiffness and pulse wave velocity, which in turn increases cardiovascular disease morbidity and mortality. This study measured aortic pulse wave velocity using a SIG Mohr device, and they found a negative trend in aortic pulse wave velocity among 25 hydroxy vitamin D quartiles. Subjects in the bottom 25 hydroxy vitamin D quartile show the highest pulse wave velocity of 9.04 meters per second versus 7.7 meters per second in the highest 25 hydroxy vitamin D quartile. Vitamin D also affects, reduces inflammation. This study found a significant inverse relationship between C-reactive protein and 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentrations. Another factor is matrix metalloproteinase, or MMP. Proteins in this family are involved in the breakdown of extracellular matrix in normal physiological processes, such as embryonic development, reproduction, and tissue remodeling, as well as in disease processes such as arthritis and metastasis from cancer. One study reported that higher MMP 9 quartiles were independently associated with higher aortic wall thickness and larger luminal diameter, but not abdominal aortic plaque, coronary artery calcium, or the aortic luminal diameter wall thickness, supporting the hypothesis that therapies targeting MMP 9 may affect the abdominal aortic wall and modify aortic pathology. Another study found similar effects. Now, respiratory infections have also been linked to risk of cardiovascular disease. For example, in England and Wales and Hong Kong, there are peaks of myocardial infarction at times when influenza activity is high. In England and Wales, around 3% of the myocardial infarction associated deaths and around 1% of the associated hospitalizations were attributed to influenza. In Hong Kong, it's more like 3 to 5%. One of the effects of vitamin D is to reduce the risk of infectious diseases through production of capsaicin. So we've seen that the higher serum 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations are associated with lower risk of hypertension, diabetes, arterial calcification, inflammation, NMP9, and respiratory infections. Smoking and obesity lower 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentration. Therefore, higher serum 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations should be associated with lower risk of cardiovascular disease. The next slide will examine the evidence that it in fact does. A study in Utah with 41,000 patients found that vitamin D deficiency was associated with highly significant increase in the prevalence of diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, and peripheral vascular disease. And those without risk factors, but with severe vitamin D deficiency, had increased likelihood of developing diabetes, hypertension, and hyperlipidemia. The vitamin D levels are also highly associated with coronary artery disease, myocardial infarction, heart failure, and stroke, as well as with incident death, heart failure, coronary disease, stroke, and their composite. This paper by Anderson et al. Published 2010. Now, here is the relationship between 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations and the relative hazard ratio for cardiovascular disease. This is a meta-analysis done from about half a dozen different observational studies where serum 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations were measured at the time of enrollment, and the people were followed for 3 to 5 to 10 years. And you can see that the rates are highest for the very lowest levels, around, in this case, around 20 nanomoles per liter. By the time one gets around 75 to 80 nanomoles per liter, there's very little apparent further reduction in risk. But there's a very steep slope going from the level typical of the UAE to a typical, the values more typical of somebody who's in the sun or taking high vitamin D supplements. This is a study from Germany showing that those with the highest vitamin D concentration, or in fact, those with the lowest had the highest mortality rate over a 6-year follow-up. More of the same, this is the United States. Again, those with the those with the lowest values had the highest mortality rate. Another paper found that both vitamin D deficiency and supplementation were related to cardiovascular disease. Shown here the survival for those with less than 30 nanomoles per liter versus those who are not deficient. It's about a factor of 2 difference over about a 5-year period. And those who were supplementing had a better survival than those who were not supplementing. They then found that those who had the higher vitamin D level, the lower vitamin D levels, had greater risk of all these adverse outcomes. Skip that one. There was a paper from 1991 showing that both in Scotland and in Kuwait, mortality and death for circulatory disease were higher in the winter and lower in the summer. In fact, this was used, results like this were used by Robert Sprague in 1981 to suggest that UVB through producing vitamin D reduced the risk of cardiovascular disease based on looking at latitude, altitude, and season. Myocardial infarction, well, I don't know how many people are using statins in the UAE, but it turns out that some of the modern statins, one of the effects seems to be that it increases serum 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations. This found that those using rosuvastatin increased their 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations from 14 nanomoles per liter to 36.3 nanograms per milliliter, and also increased their 125. So this suggests that that though prescribing statins is actually a way of prescribing vitamin D. In fact, a recent paper compared statins and vitamin D and found that both appear to lower C-reactive protein and inflammation, atherogenesis and platelet aggregation, and raise endothelial progenitor cells, endothelial cell repair, and thrombomodulin. So if you're using or thinking about using or know somebody using statins, you might, which have some adverse effects. I was hearing recently that there's a 2% chance of developing diabetes with using statins. So, you know, there's some risk factors from those, whereas taking vitamin D should reduce the risk of diabetes. Now we get to the recommendations. Vitamin D researchers meeting in Paris in 2009 recommended that a target range of 75 to 100 nanomoles per liter. The U.S. Endocrine Society recommends a level of at least 75 nanomoles per liter, and for people over the age of 18 years, 1,500 to 2,000 IU per day. Those who are obese, 2 to 3 times that. It should be cautioned that there is large variability in response to oral vitamin D intake. This paper, published by Garland et al., shows that for any oral intake, there's a very, very large range of 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentrations, which means that it's wise to test 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentrations, especially if either you think you're deficient or if you're taking high doses. And it turns out that those with very low 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentrations will increase their levels much more rapidly at first, and then when they get to higher doses, higher concentrations, the increase becomes much slower. So, here are additional resources, and you can email me for a copy of this presentation.